Shrink Wrap Radio number 732, Heather Vokush, M.A., on protecting mental health in crazy times.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Heather Vokush, whose career in organizational development, education, cross-culture, and media has spanned five continents and multiple sectors. An expert in virtual learning, she has spent the pandemic establishing an impact tech project promoting mental health and building capacity for psychosocial support in conflict zones. There's so much more to say about her work and career. You'll just have to listen. Heather Vokush, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me, David. It's a real honor.
And I'm so happy to finally be connected because for the past half hour, we've been struggling with technology. You're in Vienna. I'm in Northern California, and the gods of technology, who knows where they are, but they've been messing with us. And so it's great. And I've been so eager to speak to you because the little bit of email that we've exchanged, you are having such an interesting, exciting, fascinating career. And amazingly, you evidently went to the same high school where four of my kids went to high school, Rancho Cotati in Rohnert Park, California. So did you meet any person with Van Nuys as the last name when you were there?
Well, that was many, many years ago.
For them, too. For them, too. So they're grown adults.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember, but I love your program, but I never knew that you were based at Sonoma State. And when I saw that, I thought, oh my goodness, I wonder if he knows Rancho Cotati. And there you go. So it's a very small world.
It sure is. So where did you grow up then?
I grew up all over the place. I grew up in California, but also in Switzerland and in Reno and all over the place. I've actually, in total, I've lived outside of the States more than I have lived in the States at this point.
And, okay, for your childhood, I gather you moved around a lot in your childhood. Why was that? Was it one of your parents in the military or government, or what was going on there?
It wasn't so much in childhood. It was more family issues, you know, you could say divorce and things like that. And the move to Switzerland was because my father got a job there. Well, what is not known so much in the States is a lot of the nuclear weapons program. The U.S. nuclear weapons program actually was created in Switzerland with General Electric. And so a lot of these U.S., mainly from California, engineers were sent to Switzerland
in the 60s.
Yeah. And so that we were one of them. And
wow.
And I
grew up in Los Angeles, ducking under the desk, you know, the drills against the atomic bomb that we were pretty sure was going to come from Russia at some point.
And, yeah, well, what's interesting is later on in my life, I spent 12 years in Tokyo, actually. I got my bachelor's in psychology at UCSB, and then I got a master's in clinical psychology in a university connected to Berkeley. Well, it was in Berkeley, but it doesn't exist now. And then after that, I went to Tokyo for 12 years. And during that time, I made many friends who are atomic bomb survivors. You know, hibakusha is what they're called. And at that time, I told them about our duck and cover things, and they just they found it humorous.
Wow. dark
that's
humor.
Not gonna work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned to me in an email was your personal experience in dealing with intergenerational trauma, mm-hmm. and the connection to burnout. And so from that, I took the implication that somehow your life has been affected by intergenerational or generational trauma. So if you don't mind, take us through that. And we're not short on time, so you can tell the whole story.
Okay, absolutely. It'd be my pleasure. I guess I'd like to preface it just a bit by saying that what I found during the pandemic is that many of the people around me really suffered with mental health issues, maybe not necessarily for the first time, but for the first time they started talking about it. And part of this is I do a lot of mentoring of young people of a refugee background, and their post-traumatic stress came out a lot during COVID.
Yeah.
So I had many people with mental health issues on different levels. And so I have spent the pandemic trying to understand what is the genesis of many of these things and what is the connection. Now, during this process, my own burnout came. It quite strong. It came back. And what I realized was actually it was tied to another period of history, which is the Great Depression. Because during the Great Depression, my mother's father ended up killing himself under the weight of economic ruin, essentially.
Yeah. Wow.
And she idolized him. She was just a little girl. Now, what happened is her mother was left with all these children, no money, and she married a man who was a very upstanding citizen, everybody thought, but he went on to be extremely abusive to my mother when she was a little girl. And this lasted for, 15 years until my mother could move out. Now, what happened was, then, of course, my mother was absolutely traumatized, but they had no words for things like that then. And my mother went on to be the black sheep of the family, had mental health issues in and out of, care homes, a lot of medication. She became addicted to the medication. And she was singled out as being the bad one, as being the crazy one, which so often happens in these cases. And then I, as her child, was the person who took care of her, which, of course, you can't,
Right.
And so it was interesting for me when I realized, oh, my goodness, during this pandemic, the reason that I'm having insomnia actually stretches all the way back to the Great Depression. But even though I've got all of this psychological training, I never put the two and two together.
Yeah.
And so this is one thing that I feel is so imperative. We tend to think of these symptoms in silos. This person has alcoholism. This person does this. But we need to look at the broader context.
We're all part of this big network, like spider web.
That's right.
And it's all
interconnected. Yeah, and the web is between us, but it's also intergenerational. And if we don't look at the big picture, then we're going to miss so much.
I hadn't thought about this in relation to what's going on now, but my own mother, I believe, was in high school during the Great Depression. And so she was not able to go to college. And she talked about friends who, I believe, died of hunger. She never went into it with a whole lot of detail. And I wasn't curious enough to really dig, as I would now wish that I had done. So then you talk about, you related it to burnout. And were you experiencing some burnout in your own career before you had this insight?
Well, first, if I can go back to the thing with your mother, and so could it be that her struggles in that area somehow contributed to your becoming, you know, doing what you do, you know, because I think a lot of times, you know, the children then try to solve the problems and go into healing professions, you know. So for me, so anyway, there's that element. For me, my burnout, the issue with my burnout, it has been, you know, it just goes on. And then when it gets, what can I say? When I get the strong symptoms, then I'll do something just to kind of appease the symptoms, and then it comes back. And so it's been a companion, I guess you could say, for years. And I should have gotten something done, but I didn't. But regarding this pandemic, it came up more, you know, possibly because, you know, we're at home. I think that, you know, burnout is actually being called a shadow pandemic because the work-life balance has gotten very confused for many people. And, you know, just the strategies of dealing with it have become very confused. And so for me, it's actually been great because finally I really looked at it. And in terms of burnout, I've come up, the normal formula, if you will, is ERI. It's effort, reward, imbalance. This came from 1956, I guess. And it just means if you put in a lot of effort and you don't get reward, well, then you probably are going to get frustrated and burnout. And what I realized on this is actually it should be a different model. And for me, it should be systems, health, environment, the origin, reward, hope, and effort. I call it she or he. And I'm going to start a whole thing regarding a burnout journey is what I call it. Because what I'm realizing is we need to look at this more contextual, as we need to look at mental health more contextual as well.
Okay. And so have you been confined to being indoors because of COVID? And if so, for how long?
Well, I live out in the countryside. And so, no, you know, I take walks every day, you know, outside. I'm not in the center of Vienna. So as far as this, there is a lockdown here, but they have something like a mental health lockdown in Austria that if you're just, you're allowed to go walk around. And so I must admit it hasn't been really that challenging.
Okay. Yeah. Because, similarly here, I mean, we've been on lockdown more or less since I can't even remember. It's really messed with my sense of time. I think it was March when it all started for us. And we've stayed indoors. We not had any family come into the house. We have met with our adult kids and grandchildren outside in the backyard when the weather was warm, everybody wearing masks and keeping distance. So so it's been a long time, and it's definitely, as I say, it's messed with my head, mostly in terms of the sense of time, I guess. And, you know, I've been saying on the podcast, and I believe that our brains are in part mentally constructed by social interaction. And certainly maintained and lubricated by social interaction, in-person social interaction, because as wonderful as Zoom, and we're on Skype now, it's amazing that you've spent so much of your life out of the country, out of the U.S. And I have to ask you, you know, as somebody who grew up here at least much of your life and who's now been away for so long, we've just gone through this horrible period in Washington, D.C. of what's been called the insurrection. And I don't think it's over in many ways. It mirrors a deep split in our society that's not going to easily be patched up, going back at least to the Civil War, talking about generational things. The the healing from the Civil War never happened, and the racial healing has never happened. So what was it like for you there in Vienna to see all of this coming down and to experience it?
Well, quite frankly, for me, because I follow politics a lot, and I have looked at what is going on. You know, there is Trump, but there is Trumpism. And these are two different entities. And Trump will leave, but Trumpism will stay.
Yeah.
And the whole element of that is, you know, there are similar dynamics, I guess you could say, in governments across the world.
Yeah.
And so I'm very eagerly kind of following this. What happened in the States, I go back to Eric Fromm, the famous social psychologist and also psychoanalyst, who talked about that there are times in history when people are just afraid for the future. And so they tend to hand agency over to some kind of autocrat. You know, there are three ways to escape freedom, according to Fromm. This kind of automaton conformity that you go along with everything, or authoritarianism, like handing your power to an autocrat, or destructiveness. And so when you can see the shift that has gone on in the States for a while, and And clearly we are, the question is, how far have we gone to an autocratic society? Can we pull it back or not? What's interesting for me is I'm sure that you saw the YouGov poll that said that 45% of Republicans who were polled about the Capitol riots said were in favor of them.
That's just shocking 45%. To me. I have difficulty letting that in.
I don't find it shocking at all, because when you see this kind of defiant oppositional nature of, for example, Fox News, you know, the media is promoting this. It's kind of part and parcel of that messaging. For me, the question, right before we met, I thought, right before we had this call, I just thought, okay, I'm going to go to Fox News and see how they define mental health today. Yeah. And then I'll go Psychology Today and see how they define and just compare. And literally, you can check this now, on the main mental health page of Fox News, it has something about the importance for women of carrying concealed weapons, so that way they won't be attacked.
Wow.
And then the second story was about some NFL guy with sex addiction issues. And then I went to Psychology Today, and the lead story is how to deal with existential anxiety. So, you know, I mean, for me, this is important, because even how we define mental health is different.
Yeah, it didn't even occur to me that Fox News would have a page on something like mental health, or to go to their website. So you're very open-minded in a way that you really see the importance of looking into both sides.
Well, see, the thing is that I'll tell you why I did, because I was researching who were some of the people who were the attackers at Capitol Hill, and who went there. And one of the people I was very interested in was a Fort Bragg PSYOP officer, psychological operations. Some woman named Emily Ramey, who brought 100 people from North Carolina to D.C. because she felt the elections had been stolen. And then she stated that they didn't go inside the Capitol. We don't know. But for me, that's interesting. She has been trained, and some of her cohorts presumably have been trained in psychological operations.
Yeah.
And now they are, you know, they were in that group. And so it would be naive of us to think that somehow mental health these days is only what some people learn in universities. It's a huge contextual picture that we will need to really understand and integrate in order to make positive steps, I believe.
Yeah. I want to take a moment to shift the audio on my side because I'm using these earbuds so that they're to eliminate any possibility of echo and feedback. But I normally need to wear hearing aids, and usually I'm able to do it this way, but I think I need to go to hearing aids because I'm not getting it all as well as I should. So this is means I have to tell the software that we're in Skype. I don't know how to tell Skype to shift the audio. Well, maybe that's the issue.
Well, I can hear you fine.
That's the issue. So, it's not coming into my earbuds. These are, go ahead and say something.
Hi.
These were actually being earplugs. When we were trying to go on Zoom, I would have been hearing through these. And normally, it's strong enough and clear enough that clarity isn't an issue. So not only was I not wearing my hearing aids, I also had plugs in my ears.
So that was our Zoom issue then.
Yeah, I think this will help. Okay, things along a little bit. You had mentioned, I'm shifting away from that. We can come back to it as it comes into our because I sort of titled the show. That was the other thing. We were having email problems, and I figured out in the 11th hour that you were not getting my emails from Shrink Wrap Radio, where I was telling you, well, here's what I think we'll talk about. Here's what I'm going to suggest. What do you think of this title? And I never heard back.
Oh, yeah, I did get those emails.
So
yeah.
I just went ahead and made up a title. And
oh, no.
Yeah.
So I tell you what, David, what I'm going to also do is to send you some I didn't get any of those emails. And so I was like, are we still on? I don't know. I'll send you some other email addresses just to be sure. But anyway, I'm really excited.
Other email addresses might be helpful. I think I was going, my shrink wrap radio was going into your spam. And as I said just before the show.
No, it wasn't going into spam because I checked and it didn't make it there at all. But anyway, whatever it is that you decided to be the title, do you remember what it is now? Because we can go towards that if that's easier.
Yeah, it turned out to be a really long title. And, I can tell you what it is. Here we go. This will be episode number 732.
Good for you, man.
Yeah, and also, I wasn't sure how to pronounce your name until we finally got connected. So I called you Heather Wokish. And it turns out that your name is Czechoslovakian and it's Wokish. So Heather Wokish on supporting emotional resilience among the disadvantaged.
Can we not do that? Or is it set in stone?
I think we could not do that. Yeah, I can change that.
Because for me, that's not the topic. The topic is the intersectionality of these, because it's not only the disadvantaged. I'm talking about nurses who are working in California. We're talking about how about if we do this right after our call? Can I send you some examples of titles and then you just pick and combine as you choose?
Yes, assuming that... that we can get each other's emails. I know I can get you yours, and I know that you can get mine if I use my academic email address. So yeah, we can dialogue a bit, but I want to do that right away because I have a schedule that I'm trying to maintain here. We're already behind schedule.
As soon as we hang up here, then I'll send you 5 different titles and then just mix and match what you want. But for me, the point here is more how these things are interconnected.
Okay.
For all of us, not only the disadvantaged.
Yeah. And that's why I had some difficulty kind of describing what this was going to be about, because your life, your career, your thinking is so varied. You've got your fingers in a lot of different pots. And
I think the TED Talk title, it's like protecting mental health during the pandemic. I think basically that's it.
That's a good title. So I'd like to go with that.
Yeah, the TED Talk is called Protecting Mental Health in Crazy Times, a To-Do List. And it has 10 points.
That was your TED Talk, yes.
Yeah. But so something like that, I think, would be more compelling maybe to your people. Anyway, so I'm going to be quiet now. You tell me where you want to go and we'll go there.
Well, let's go with the TED Talk and the 10 points. I actually had something about that at the very end, but let's do that because that's very relevant right now.
Okay. So I'll wait for your lead to lead us in.
Tell us about your TED Talk and the 10 points for mental health.
Well, thank you for asking. So basically, I had come to a lot of realizations through the summer during the pandemic, and I decided to consolidate all of them into a TED Talk, and it's called a TEDx Talk. It's called Protecting Mental Health in Crazy Times, a To-Do List, and it has these 10 points, and I'll just walk through them very, very quickly.
Okay.
They are relevant for anybody. They would be relevant for all of your listeners. The first one is mainly just to take stock. You know, the pandemic opened up this facade in mental health, but, you know, there were something like, you know, a billion people were estimated to have mental, you know, disorders before the pandemic, but we didn't really deal with that. A billion people across the world. And of course, that has exploded during the pandemic. And so to just kind of take stock on a societal level, but also on a personal level. It's like, what is going on regarding mental health? And this is when I started dealing with my own burnout. Then the second point is to get context. Now,
I want to make sure I've got the first point. Succinctly, what's the first point?
The first point is to take stock, is to say, okay, where am I on a mental health level now? Uh-huh. Where is my community? Where is my country? Just to really deal with these things. For example, U.S. military suicides have increased by 20% during the pandemic. And suicides across the world are now also being called a shadow pandemic, as is domestic violence. And so I think the first step is to say, okay, where are we now, to take stock?
Okay.
And the second step is to put that within a broader context. Now, for me, it was, okay, you know, my own intergenerational trauma. But I think it's really important to understand the genesis of personal injury and collective trauma. You know, the rates of alcoholism have increased during the pandemic, the rates of domestic violence. But often we see these things as, rather than putting them into a broader context, it's like, okay, if you're stuck at home and you're in a lockdown and people are drinking, well, domestic violence is going to increase. And what mental health implications does that have?
Yeah. I see what you're saying, too, is also by putting it in a broader context, one can avoid a certain amount of self-blame.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And also it means that we can come up with better solutions.
Okay.
Too. You know, I think what's in researching this, I came up with the most amazing statistic. In the United States, there are 10 times more people with mental health disorders in jail or prison than in a mental health facility. So when, you know, and of course, people of color are more likely to end up, you know, in jail.
Say that again. My mind is all over the place.
So in the United States, there are 10 times more people with mental health disorders in jail or prison than in a mental health facility.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And of course, the rates increase, you know, for people of color. And so that is a contextual issue. We should not be blaming the individual. We should say, what is going on in society that this is happening?
Yes.
But that usually is connected to the third point. And that I called it follow the money. And because, you know, what's amazing is that most countries, and, you know, the States included, only 2% of the health budget is spent on mental health. Mm-hmm. And that's only of the health budget. And so, you know, and of course, during the pandemic, you've got, you know, social services have been cut across the board. We don't have money for this food program. We don't have money for that domestic violence shelter, you know, but what implications does that have for future mental health problems? Now, meanwhile, of course, Jeff Bezos made $48 billion more in Q2. And so that's another thing. When we've got this incredible imbalance in society, right, it's difficult to feel balanced as a person. And it's something to look at.
Yeah.
So that was the third point. The fourth point is just to connect the dots. It's like, because, you know, again, as you said, you know, far too often individuals are assigned responsibility for their mental health challenges. But if we don't understand the systemic component, then we miss the opportunity to fix it and to repair the structure. So rather than saying, okay, you're depressed here, take some meds, go home, you know, it might be interesting to understand the broader societal and personal context of that person. And I believe that we're going to have to go that route in 2021 to deal with the onslaught of this pandemic on a mental health level.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the next step, I'll just run through this, is to redefine who is an expert. Usually experts are people with degrees or, you know, whatever. I believe that the experts need to be people with lived experience, people who are service users, who say, this is me, this is how it works for me, you know, as opposed to having experts be the people with the highest level of education.
Yes.
And that leads to the sixth point, and that is to expand the narratives. For example, I have a friend who is a COVID nurse, and she's in the States, and she all of a sudden now has a horrible anxiety problem, but she spends time hiding in the bathroom because she's shaking so much with anxiety.
Oh, my goodness. She's
hiding in the bathroom at work because she's afraid if they see her, they're going to fire her. Her hospital will fire her. And if they fire her, then she can't put food on the table for her kid. You know, but meanwhile, she's terrified that she's going to give COVID to her kid. So it's like when you look at the context, of course, this woman is going to have anxiety. Yeah. You know, so we need to look at the narratives. And so that's something I feel that we don't do enough. The next point, then we need to find synergies. How can we bring in the community to help in the healing and not just say, look, it's your problem, take a week off, you know? And then I'll just run through. The next one is to go global. This is an issue of global governance. These are issues we need to change laws, We need to connect with best practices across in different areas. There's this incredible group that I've just fallen in love with. It's called United for Global Mental Health. And they are getting people from all across the world. Anybody can join. People with lived experience, people who are big professors and whatever, all coming together to see how can we join together. And then the ninth is to make noise, to talk about it, especially people with lived experience, to break the stigma. And then 10 is action, to take some form of action. And and so I would highly encourage anybody who's interested in these, please to go watch the TEDx talk. I would be delighted for that. This is what I see as...
And I'll put a link... I'll put a link in the show notes to the TEDx talk.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So that's that TEDx talk.
I wanted to, something else that you told me about that I believe is a current project that you've been working on and is probably related to everything that you've been saying is something you call supporting MHPSS workers. I've got mental health, maybe psychology. What are MHPSS?
Mental health and psychosocial support. Yeah.
Psychosocial. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. That's the people you were talking about. So, challenges in supporting mental health and psychological social support workers in war zones. How did that come about? And what have you learned about that?
Well, thank you for asking. So I set up a project. So far, it's a volunteer project during the pandemic. It's called Miss Sparrow. And it's focused on how can we, you know, keeping in mind that in the States, for example, we really have mental health challenges, but it's relatively better than, for example, in really low resource places, countries, you know, in most places, for example, in Sierra Leone, the treatment gap, people who need mental health support, people who get it, the treatment gap is 100%. It means 100% of people do not get the support that they need. And in many countries, it is that way. But we also have to think about, there was a fantastic study in Lancet Psychiatry just last month, I guess it was, looking at mental health research funding. And what it found out, looking globally between 2015 and 2019, less than 10% of that funding went to countries with 90% of the global health problems. Mm-hmm. So it means basically, Asia, the Middle East, Africa gets no funding for research or for support. All of the funding goes to kind of rich countries and dealing with things like biological research as opposed to mental health support. So we have what is called a treatment gap. And the problem is it doesn't exist in a vacuum. If you have a lot of people who have mental health challenges, well, that's going to lead to extremism. That's going to lead to, you know, other issues that somehow come back to the rich countries. It isn't just a case of those people over there. And the problem is that we don't have evidence-based solutions. And so, and some of the solutions, it's like they take this U.S. English language model, and they just throw it into some developing country and say, okay, use this. Here's an app. They don't have internet connection. They don't speak English. And so what I am thinking about and what I'm going to do is set up a project. It's for scalable mental health multimedia tools for low resource and conflict areas.
You sent me something called Impact Tech project. Is that what you're talking about now?
That's it. That's it. See, part of it, Impact Tech, we can do virtual learning modules. I'm a virtual learning expert. But for people who can't read or who don't have internet, they're going to need other kinds of materials. And so what it is a research project to go in and try to figure out what kinds of materials can be created for people in low resource or conflict areas, and how can we scale it? So it's called Mespero. This is one of the projects that I've set up.
That's Espero. Is that right?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Mespero.com, and it's accessible via my website. And this is not a moneymaker. This is a volunteer thing, but I believe that it's, if we don't deal with stuff like this, you know, it's going to come back and get us at some point. So
I think it really maps onto what's happened in the U.S., you know, this big divide.
Yeah.
What you've been saying really relates, you know, in this particular microcosm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can say just in one last thing in closing, I do a lot of consulting with people in the government over here. And what they have been preparing for since August is this, I'll tell you. So first comes the health crisis, then comes the financial crisis. And that was Q4 last year. What now is going to be coming is the economic crisis. And what that means is business is going bankrupt, the government funding running out. And then what comes up after that is the social crisis. And the social crisis is more and more, you know, uprisings and dealing with populations that are, you know, for example, you know, what we saw at you know, the Capitol, but just on a much broader level. And my thing is, these things are predictable and these things are preventable. But it means that we, again, need to look at the broader context.
Yeah. How do you get access to people in government? I'm interested in that. It sounds like you, how have you got that credibility to do that?
Well, I'm a one of the things also that I do is I'm an intercultural consultant. So if a trade delegation goes to China or something like that, I can tell them how to handle that culture. You know what I mean? And so with that background, and also I have an organizational development background, then people just ask for my, you know, consultation on different things. Also too, you know, I'm kind of a tech person, and what I find interesting on this whole different level, but it's totally connected to mental health, is the radical changes going on in HR right now. You know,
also,
and I'm sure.
What are those?
Oh man, it's a huge paradigm shift.
And HR,
the human resources.
Human resources, the place in business where they look at the hiring and the firing and the qualifications that people need, right?
That's exactly right. But you see, that whole area is going to also be even bigger during this economic issue coming up, as, you know, people are losing their jobs and the companies want to retain certain people. And so we're coming up to a very interesting time now. But what I'm finding is disturbing for me on an HR level is the extent to which it's becoming tech. And these are maybe not the corner shop, but this is multinational companies. There's basically three main things. One is augmented analytics, using artificial intelligence to do things like prioritization. A big area right now is called sensing technology. And that is, how do you aggregate sentiment data of your workers to try to understand what's the general mood?
You know? Sentiment, yes.
Yeah. And so the extent to which hiring now is controlled by artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And so we are entering on so many levels of mental health. We're entering new territory. And I firmly believe that we have to really keep our eyes open and also look at the broader context. How do all of these people, how do all of these pieces fit together?
Yes, yes, indeed. So how do you, wow, you got your fingers in so many different pots or marionette strings, or I don't know what the right metaphor is. What are you, one is I'm amazed by your ability to do all of that. Two is what are you doing to keep your own psychological balance? I mean, everything that you're laying out could lead to enormous despair.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So how do you keep that at bay?
That's a good question, and thank you so much for that. I think that what I firmly believe, David, is this. We have come to an incredibly important crossroads in our society. And I firmly, you had referred to before of two different sides, you know, or different versions. I think that people like you, and I love the fact that you're doing exactly what you're doing, communicating and having, you know, spreading ideas. People like me, I do this in my own way. But I believe that we, if there were ever a time that we need to be vocal and organized and busy, it's really going to be 2021, mm-hmm. You know, because now is going to be really major decisive times in our societies, literally globally. And so for me, I have one thing. This project, Maspero, is actually connected to a friend of mine's project. His name is Les Sim, and he set up something called the International Forum for Understanding based out of Cambridge. And what he's doing is a step further. He's taking not only mental health, he's also connecting things to nuclear weapons and just looking at the whole ball of wax. Yeah. And this project will be just one. So again, for me to answer your question, understanding the broader context and when you see how the pieces fit together, that's inspiring and it's also motivating because, you know, once now I realize that there are these people who are sitting, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people sitting there with mental health challenges, getting zero support, embedded in stigmatization. And we can do just a little bit of stuff to help them. Man, let's do it. You know?
Yeah.
So this is the motivation.
Yeah. So I'm hearing your answer to how do you keep despair at bay is being active, is not being overwhelmed by it, but rather saying, okay, I'm going to move ahead and do what I can do.
You know, I think that's all any of us can do. But I think that some forces would want us to be stuck in despair because then we're passive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the more that we can encourage each other with positive values to go out there and make a really good difference, then we must.
You know, that would be, that is, I think, a great wrap up for this interview. That's a good, good statement and a good place for us to leave it. So Heather, what a privilege it is to meet you and talk with you. And Heather Volkisch, thanks for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
And thank you so much, David. And say hello to Rancho Cotati for me.
Well, if you made it this far, congratulations and thank you. I say this because the first part of the interview may have been a little bit confusing to you, and it was a while before we really got down to what my guest, Heather Walkish, really wanted to discuss. The reason for this peripatetic start has its roots in a variety of technological challenges. What with Heather in Vienna and me in Northern California, we were having difficulty communicating via email in the days running up to the interview. Way late in the game, I realized that she was not getting my emails from my shrink wrap radio address. Only yesterday did it occur to me to try contacting her using my academic email address. That one went through. Fortunately, we got our signal straight to the extent that we both arrived in my Zoom room at the appointed time. However, for reasons we could not fathom, I was unable to hear Heather's audio on my end. We spent a half hour or more trying to solve that problem, but without any luck. This was bewildering to Heather because she reports that she regularly uses Zoom and it has always served her well. So then we decided to use Skype instead. I was reluctant to use Skype because in the past I had found it difficult to record the video. To my surprise, I discovered that Skype has been upgraded and in fact did such a wonderful job that I'm tempted to move to that platform for future interviews. But I am a creature of habit and we'll have to see. Now for the next technological glitch you heard or saw in the interview. I'm not sure if I should blame it on technology or on my own human error. I had to set up the preferences in Zoom to accommodate my Apple AirPods, but in the heat of the moment and the confusion around switching from Zoom to Skype, I had forgotten to set Skype up for the AirPods. So for the first maybe third of the interview, I realized that I was struggling to understand Heather. Then it hit me that the sound was not coming directly into my ears, but was coming through the speakers on my computer, and that my AirPods were really functioning as earplugs. I normally wear hearing aids at this point in my life, but usually I use AirPods during the interviews because the sound is strong enough for me to get by without hearing aids, and the AirPods eliminate echo and feedback that sometimes can happen. In the case of today's interview, my AirPods were actually acting as earplugs. No wonder I was having trouble understanding my guest. Okay, enough about me. I am so impressed by Heather. She is absolutely amazing in the variety of skills that she has mastered and her overview of the world situation in terms not only of the pandemic, but also her systems view of the multiple crises in which we find ourselves is incredibly comprehensive. And her passion. She's a real warrior in the best sense of the word. She's concerned about the economic disparities that exist not just in the U.S. or Europe, but across most of the planet. And she's deeply pained by our global failure to adequately address the psychological suffering that is rampant everywhere. She works as a consultant and advisor to a variety of governments to help them address these issues. She believes that technology and artificial intelligence have to be harnessed to deliver psychological help at the scale that is required. She is an activist on so many issues and organizations that it's hard for me to list them here or even get my mind around them all. She's enough of an optimist to believe that there is hope, but at the same time, enough of a realist to see that we are on the edge of cataclysmic disaster. I asked her what keeps her from despair. Her reply, doing what she can. That's a necessary prescription for us all.
Hi, Dr. Dave. It's Adam from Melbourne, Australia. I've been a long-time listener for over 7 years, and finally I think it's time to back up my appreciation of Shrink Wrap Radio with a donation. You provide such a wonderful, stimulating podcast, and you deserve to have this supported financially by your loyal listeners like me. And you're right, donating to Shrink Wrap Radio made me feel great, so I encourage other listeners to donate and keep supporting your unique podcast. Thanks, Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Adam Fennessy, there in Melbourne, for that lovely endorsement and encouragement for others to get their name on the honor roll. Again, I want to thank all of our regular donors out there. Your names are on the honor roll on the Shrink Wrap Radio website. This morning, I've been going through and updating donors from 2020 to 2021. Not only do I get to review the names of you faithful supporters of this work, but also to experience fresh gratitude for your continuing support in this new year. A big thank you to all of you folks. And with that, we'll wrap it up once again. Thanks so much to today's guest, therapist and worldwide activist, Heather Volkusch. Be sure to see her TEDx presentation about handling mental injury on personal and collective levels, titled Protecting Mental Health in Crazy Times, a To-Do List. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Next week, my guest will be anthropologist Roy Richard Grinker, PhD, author of the new book, Nobody's Normal, How Culture Created the Stigma of Mental Illness. So until then, please remember to be kind to yourself and others.
Been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.